Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 4th of April. Very nice to have you with us on this gray morning, but it'll get better, I think. Maybe something will get better. I don't know. We'll see. And then we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff that'll make you think that things aren't getting better. But hopefully by the end, you'll find something in your life that shows that maybe things will get better. Does that make sense?
Maybe.
That's right. That is the mindset we're all walking into this morning in Studio A, so we welcome you to it. It's a delight to have you here. If you would like to take part in the program, all you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. A quick little note. We all have our – well, let me introduce everybody, and then we'll get to – we have some plugs this morning that we want to do. So first, Aaron Pisidia is here, professor of economics at Siena College. If you can't put an economics professor on the radio today, then when can you? Today is the day. It's your panel, man.
We're just going to give it over.
It's all yours.
Jay and I are leaving.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah,
you know the.
Are you really?
Yes, I am. The paradox of being an economist is that the worse things get, the more people want to hear from you.
Yeah.
During good times, nobody cares what economists have to say. They just like slide into the background, and it's like, oh, you're an economist, great, whatever. But as soon as things start taking a turn for the worse, all of a sudden people are really interested in what you have to say. So, it's tough to I'm happy to share my thoughts on this, but it's tough to have a bright mood when you're in demand, when what's happening can bring things down fast.
Yeah. There's a lot of pain out there, and then to have to examine that is.
And you're not just an economist, you're also an economics professor. So you are like, this is your moment. You are Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift combined. Everyone wants to hear from you.
That's a lot of pressure.
Well, so, sort of like Aristotle, you know, all your students are waiting to hear your take on.
Yeah. No.
Jay is so
this
old
is what
school.
This is what
yeah,
I taught
really
yeah.
old school.
He went back.
So you're just old. Wait. I'll get to my first question in a moment for you, sir.
Aristotle, Taylor Swift, and Bruce Springsteen comparisons. I've got a – that puts more pressure on me than I already felt. So
we call them Aaron.
Okay.
Yes. Jay Jocknowitz is here, semi-retired, although – still, editor-in-large, columnist, editorial writer of the Times Union. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm well. I looked out the window this morning and realized I didn't put the chickens in last night. You didn't ask about the chickens. And there they were in the field.
Do you know what's going on? Screw the chickens. Do you know what's happening?
See, this is what keeps it in perspective. I still have eggs. Almost free.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Judith Enck is with us. Judith is former EPA regional administrator, professor at Bennington College, and president of Beyond Plastics. Good morning, Judith. How are you?
I'm great. Last night, my husband Mark and I went to Bennington College to see Bread and Puppet, if you've not seen them in a while, and they were amazing. And it's such a reminder of the role of art and fun during protest. And the place was packed. Professor David Bond opened. He brought Bread and Puppet to Bennington, and he opened by reading a news release from the college in 1964 welcoming Bread and Puppet. They've been around.
Oh, that's very cool.
They've been around that long, and it was so wonderful to see community people and college students and. Cool. The Bread and Puppet message. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Bread and Puppet. And they're similar to Arm of the Sea Players down in Saugerties. And they're coming to Kingston soon. So I had like an hour of hope and happiness. And then I prepared for this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. So just at various times, if I just bring up Bread and Puppet, you'll know why. We need to do that. So check it out. They are amazing and wonderful and,
so
and
talented.
Coming up in our region and productions going on. I want to mention that Chris Hayes of MSNBC fame will be with me tomorrow night at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York. We'll be talking about his new book, The Siren's Call. Something tells me we'll be talking about other stuff, too. And That will be tomorrow night. There are still tickets available, and you can find out more by going to Bartabon.org, and find out more about Chris Hayes with me for The Siren's Call. I'm looking forward to that very much. This actually was rescheduled. We had a date in February, but the weather did not cooperate and allow us to get to the venue. So we're doing it again in April when things seem like it'll be.
And go early calmer. And take a walk over walkway over the Hudson in Poughkeepsie, which is incredible.
Sure, I'll do that.
You should. I'll lobby you on the break.
Okay. Very good. Again, Chris Hayes tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at the Bartabon, and should be a fun time. I do hope you can join us. All right. Let's get to what is going on in the news today. Well, stocks plunged yesterday. Now, for those of you keeping score at home, you'll remember that Wednesday afternoon, after the markets closed, the president celebrated Liberation Day on the Rose Garden lawn, and with a lot of pomp and circumstance and tulips, he announced these tariffs, which ultimately meant 10% tariffs across the board. And then showed this chart, which I said yesterday looked like a leaderboard at Bedminster, but it's now been pretty much debunked, as most of the numbers on it are not accurate. However, it still was used as the prime exhibit A as to what was going to happen. Well, then Thursday came in, and that just set off a flurry of activity. And a flurry makes it sound like it was fun, but it wasn't. Financial markets took their steepest one-day decline since 2020, which was, of course, the pandemic. Investors, companies, ordinary Americans fretted about rising costs from an onslaught of new tariffs. U.S. stocks closed down sharply, with tech-heavy NASDAQ falling close to 6% for the day and about 17% from its mid-February peak, with Apple, Google, and others all posting big losses. The S&P 500 notched its biggest one-day drop since summer of 2020 in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, closing down 4.8%, while the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell almost 4%. Major indexes in Asia and Europe also took a fall, though some recovered their losses during their trading day. The wave of new import taxes, which are expected to cost U.S. consumers and businesses hundreds of billions of dollars this year, threatens to radically alter the economic outlook. Analysts at J.P. Morgan describe the tariffs as the largest U.S. tax hike since 1968, and economists on Wall Street and beyond began warning that a downturn is becoming much more likely this year. On top of this, you have countries now in a retaliatory mode and looking to one up. So now China says it will match Trump's tariffs with 34% on U.S. goods. And that is just the beginning. And then in all of this, we also have a jobs report that came out, which shows that job growth is strong amid these worries over tariffs. So there's a lot to make our way through this morning. Aaron Pasitti, I said you would be up first, and indeed, how screwed are we?
Oh, we're beyond screwed.
Okay. All right.
This will be a self-inflicted crisis of historic proportions, and the more I was processing what happened yesterday, the more apparent it became that this is serious, and I don't think people understand the magnitude of how serious this will be, both in terms of their own personal finances, but also over the more medium term, like, say, over the next 12 to 24 months, how serious this is going to be in terms of the economic damage and unemployment we see. And let's remember, we're only 2.5 months into his presidency. So Trump has effectively liberated us from economic prosperity and economic security. That's the announcement. He imposed, on average, a 23% tariff, which is a tax increase, across the board. Some countries got hit harder. Some countries got hit less hard. But this is the highest tariff rate the U.S. economy has seen since 1909. And it amounts to effectively a 23% sales tax on average for consumers. So I'm not, you know, Mr. I'm going to cut your taxes. I'm going to keep inflation down has seemingly done the opposite. And just to, before I start diving into the specifics, I was thinking most of yesterday afternoon, and I was using my classes as guinea pigs to figure out how best to position this. Where do you start with something like this? And I was going kind of back and forth last night, and it comes down to this. I read the Wall Street Journal's editorial board's piece yesterday on this, and I found myself saying, oh, yeah, no, they're right. Those are really good points. And for anybody who knows my politics, the fact that I'm agreeing with the Wall Street Journal editorial board tells us that we are in for some really, really dark times. This is going to, according to my back of the envelope calculation, and it seems pretty consistent with other numbers I've seen, this is going to cost the average person $2,400 a year in higher costs on the stuff they buy. So for a family of four, that's about a $10,000 increase in costs per year. Now, the true cost of that is actually hidden because when prices go up, some people forgo purchasing a new car. So then you have to deal with an older clunker that needs more repairs. So not only is the cost of living going to go up, but the standard of living for most people is going to go down because of the goods that they stop buying because they become too expensive. That's also going to lead to an increase in the production of lower cost substitutes, which is going to lower the productivity and quality of products that consumers get. This is a declaration of economic world war. That's what this is. He is saying these tariffs are we're going to be punishing your countries and very likely causing a recession in your country. Thank you very much. So that U.S. consumers can pay $2,500 more for the stuff they buy. This seems like a lose, lose, lose. I don't know how many dimensions of lose you can throw into a sentence. Everybody's going to lose on this.
Well, got down to the penguin level yesterday.
Yes, I saw. I saw that.
So, give you a sense of where we're headed here.
Here's the punchline.
They're eating the fish.
Yeah, that's right.
This is going to cost the average consumer per person $2,400 per year. It's going to lead to higher inflation. And not just higher inflation for the goods we buy. This will ripple out through supply chains and affect goods that are exempt from tariffs because they use intermediate parts. The retaliatory tariffs are going to lead to a slowdown in growth domestically and increasing layoffs, particularly for export-intensive sectors like agriculture and a lot of, more sophisticated manufacturing goods and also service providers. So the combination of high inflation and high unemployment and slow growth is what economists call stagflation. And the last time we experienced stagflation was the 1970s. The remarkable thing is that Trump has already conceded defeat on this. He said, well, we're just going to have to grin and bear it. J.D. Vance echoed that. Mm-hmm. Scott Bessent echoed that. Lutnick echoed that. They're already telling the population, we're pretty sure this is going to cause a recession. So consumers are going to have higher grocery bills. I feel bad for anybody that needs to buy a car in the next year or two because that's going to be the biggest one because they're high-ticket items and there's tariff on top of tariff on top of tariff for that. And we're going to have to deal with higher unemployment, fewer job opportunities. And the administration who promised lower grocery prices, a cure to inflation, is telling us, well, not only are you going to get inflation, but you're going to get a bonus, which is a recession. And that recession is very, as J.P. Morgan noted in one of their announcements yesterday, this is not just going to be a U.S. recession. This is a global recession. So what he's effectively doing is snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. He inherited the most robust and strongest economic recovery coming out of COVID. The unemployment rate was around 4% for years, inflation higher than we want it, but coming down, strong growth, and now he's undoing all of this. I don't know what his end objective is, and I want to kind of throw this out as a question a little bit down the line. I can't figure this out. Perhaps he's just that ignorant and doesn't know what he's doing and what the effects are going to be.
And another way of asking that question is, who benefits? Who is going to benefit from
this? I think we know, right? This is to bring in massive new revenue to pay for tax cuts.
This is the biggest reverse Robin Hood plan we've ever seen.
Right? And he told us he was going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the tariffs are supposed to raise somewhere between $600 and $800 billion per year. That works out to pretty much the cost of his tax plan, which is the tax cut, which is around $1 trillion a year. So consumers are paying a 23% higher tax to fund job cuts or to fund tax cuts for primarily millionaires and billionaires.
Right. Yep.
Now, nobody wins in this situation because
unless you're a billionaire.
Unless you're a billionaire.
The billionaires don't seem to be thrilled with this.
No.
But they're going to benefit with their tax cuts.
But their stocks are going to...
Yeah, but their stocks are going to plunge. I mean,
pummeling, and that's
the NASDAQ's already fallen an additional 6% this morning.
True.
So there's a couple theories. He's just that ignorant and doesn't know what this is going to do. Second, this is just a display of dominance and that he's going to use these tariffs as a bargaining chip. But that goes back to the ignorance. It's tough enough to negotiate a trade deal with your two closest neighbors who are allies. Now he wants to do this with the rest of the world? There's just not enough man or brain power in the administration to accomplish that. And there's my hypothesis, which is his objective is I don't believe the tariffs are going to raise revenue. And I'll tell you why in a minute. And this gets into the three-dimensional chess Steve Bannon hypothesis, which is that the goal is to create a global recession. The goal is to create so much economic pain and so much chaos that somehow, and I don't know what the causal mechanism here is, that will somehow strengthen his position. I see this as more likely strengthening Democrats and saying, like, well, look what your president did, and really diminishing his chances. So it's tough to tell where he's coming from. And I'd like to come back to that in a minute, and feel free to cut me off if I'm just blabbering too much. But before we get into the details, a tariff is a tax on imported goods. So when we buy Nikes.
Or
right?
coffee.
Or coffee.
Avocados.
Avocados, aluminum, steel. Some of those are consumer goods that we buy. Some of those are goods that businesses buy. So this is not just going to raise prices for consumers. It's going to raise prices on businesses by increasing the cost of intermediate goods. So a tariff is a tax on imports. The stated goal of this was to lower the trade deficit. And the trade deficit is the difference between what the rest of the world buys from us and what we buy from the rest of the world. So since the 1980s, we have been buying more from the rest of the world than the rest of the world has buying from us. That's largely policy induced. That's the result of a lot of free trade agreements that has resulted in lower cost consumer goods. It's also allowed U.S. firms to specialize in high productivity things. And we should run trade deficits with some countries, we can't grow coffee in the U.S. at the scale that U.S. consumers want.
Although you can grow coffee in Puerto Rico. I need to get this in.
Everyone should buy
Puerto Rican coffee.
There are goods that we can't or should not be making in the U.S. for a variety of reasons. So we rely on other countries to supply those goods for us, and we run a trade deficit with those countries. For other countries, we want to run trade surpluses, where we're exporting high-value, high-productivity goods and services. Now, on net, the trade deficit represents about 3% of all economic activity. We run a $1.2 trillion goods deficit, but we also run a $300 billion services surplus. The services the U.S. exports to the rest of the world are financial services, IT services like cloud computing, education, healthcare, tourism are all big exports. So the stated argument, we raise tariffs, that'll reduce the demand for U.S. imports, and that'll right these trade balances. It's a simplistic argument that Adam Smith debunked in the 1770s when mercantilism was dominant. And that is, if one country is running a trade deficit, they're losing because another country is running a trade surplus. Free trade, according to economists, and this goes back to the Wall Street Journal editorial piece, is that it gives us lower prices and more choices. We have a wider variety of goods that we can get at a lower cost. But economists largely ignored the downsides to that, which was the number of U.S. manufacturing jobs that have been lost to offshoring. So the intent of what Trump is talking about is correct, that global trade relations have primarily hurt middle-income U.S. workers. That's the cost. The benefit is that we've gotten a wider array of higher quality, lower priced goods. And there are ways to fix the global imbalance and create good jobs for U.S. workers without punishing the entire country. Another group that's going to benefit from this are going to be lawyers and lobbyists who will inevitably start lobbying Trump for exemptions for strategic industries. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have this army of lawyers and lobbyists take over Washington and start petitioning the Treasury Department, the U.S. Trade Commission, the Chamber of Commerce for all of these exemptions. The people who are not going to be exempt and the people who are going to be hit hardest are going to be low and middle income workers because they spend the largest percentage of their income on consumption. Higher income workers have financial cushions, right? They've got surplus income, they've got savings, they can absorb the cost. So people are going to, lower and middle income people are going to have to reallocate their budgets and forgo the consumption of a lot of things. Smaller businesses who don't have thick profit margins that can absorb these higher costs, who don't have profits that can hire lobbyists and lawyers to go to Washington, D.C. and lobby on their behalf, are going to be the other main the people who will also suffer the most. Small business owners, car dealerships, middle and low income consumers.
Farmers.
This is remarkably regressive in terms of who it's going to hurt. And I cannot overstress the magnitude of how widespread and how severe this will be.
So I want to get to the other members of this panel. I just want a couple of things. One was the full court press yesterday on from the administration of trying to tell us that everything was going to be fine. So they first sent out Peter Navarro, who is an economist, but also an aide and an advisor to President Trump. And he said, we will not negotiate. We are not going to change. These are in stone. Moments later on Air Force One, as the president was headed to Florida to golf, they said, are these negotiable? And he said, oh, yeah, these are negotiable.
Of course they are.
Yeah, these are negotiable. But my favorite is U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
That guy.
who said this. European Union won't take chicken from America, Jay. They won't take lobsters from America. They hate our beef because our beef is beautiful.
This is the same guy who also thought bringing textile and sneaker manufacturing back to the U.S. was going to make America great again. Yeah. Sweatshop jobs.
Our beef right. is beautiful. And theirs is weak. He said that. He said that. And nobody came over and said, come with us. So that's where we're headed, right? But this gets me into what you said as your first hypothesis, which is they don't know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'm going to quote Paul Krugman here. The malignant stupidity is astounding.
Right.
It's, yeah. Scott Bessin and Lutnick are not inherently dumb people. I think they understand that towing the party line is their ticket to this giant tax cut.
Right.
These are billionaires don't care about this. Billionaires can afford a Maserati that costs 50% more. Billionaires can afford a super yacht that now costs $700 million instead of $400 million. They're not going to be affected. So I'm not surprised to hear them towing the party line. It's everybody else who's going to be subsidizing the tax cuts and the consumption that is going to be provided, gift-wrapped, by Congress and the president to millionaires and billionaires.
Our beef is beautiful, and theirs is weak.
Well, we can all become vegans.
Yes, there you go. That is one yet one idea. Judith.
Wow, Aaron, thank you. I understand this better. I thought I understood
it
pretty
well.
Oh, I
haven't even started.
Yeah, I know. Thank you.
I'm just getting warmed up.
I thought
we got an hour 20. Yeah, don't worry about it. You got your time, man.
$2,400 per person per year is very striking. I want to mention two businesses that we may have forgotten about. Trump Steaks and Trump Airlines. They went bankrupt along with a number of other Trump businesses. He does not know what he's doing, and he is surrounded by
arguably beautiful beef.
Yes. that went bankrupt.
The best beef.
The best beef.
He's surrounded by people who will not tell him the truth, right? You have to bend at the knee. You have to say, sir. You have to suck up to dear leader.
Right.
And it's kind of astonishing that that is why we're on the verge of economic collapse. I think you also put your finger on something important. The only people who will be getting jobs out of this is K Street lobbyists. Because what we saw with Doge is Musk and Trump openly said, hey, Republican member of Congress, if you've got a problem, come talk to me and maybe we can carve that out. That's what we're going to see here. What I find amazing is Trump told us he would do this. And still, all the captains of industry, you know, the Nikes, the Amazons, the Jeff Bezos, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, they all supported Trump in this election. And now they're surprised. This is the chaos presidency. They do not care about what this means for people living paycheck to paycheck. They do not care about people's retirement savings shrinking in 1 week. Ironically, as so many federal employees are being fired or they're trying to incentivize people to retire if you're a federal employee. Well, who's going to retire when you just saw your retirement savings, you know, diminished by 20% in 1 day? But this is the chaos presidency and the stakes could not be higher. I mean, if you look at this politically, it's going to help Democrats, but the pain and suffering is going to be so severe right when they are cutting the federal safety nets on so many programs. Medicaid cuts are coming. I'm involved with a group called Rensselaer Women for Change. We wrote a letter to the Rensselaer County Legislature saying, what is your contingency plan on Medicare cuts? So, for instance, Medicaid cuts. So, for instance, in the county nursing home, there are roughly 240 residents. 198 of them rely on Medicaid. What happens when there are these cuts? And so every county has to do a Medicaid contingency plan. This has to start now. I mean, these, you know, federal cuts to Meals on Wheels, federal cuts to health care, to Head Start. Bobby Kennedy has cut massive numbers of people at the health agencies, including getting rid of the federal employees who worked on lead poisoning prevention. NIOSH has cut occupational safety and health, has cut their staff by 90%. This is when you need the federal safety net and when it is being just ripped to shreds.
Just a note on Medicaid and Medicare that they're now overseen by Dr. Mehmet Oz, who was officially confirmed yesterday by the U.S. Senate. Jay Jochnowitz.
What strikes me about this discussion is that you can go down one track and you can follow that through to the, you know, to the end. So you go down the track that you rightly do, and so here are the cuts, and here's what happens. Here are the tariffs, and here's what happens because of the tariffs. And there seems to be this hope in the Trump administration that that's exactly how it's going to work out. I can't remember who it was that said this, but he said, don't retaliate against this. This is the ceiling if you let it be the ceiling, and we won't do any more. Just let this go and see how it goes. As if the world is just going to take a yes. war.
I believe the
and
term
say,
was just let it breathe.
Yeah.
That was the Treasury Secretary.
Wow.
Unbelievable. You know, we're just going to bully, you know, bully the whole world and the whole world should take it. And that would, you know, Trump has this grand plan that was hatched on some bar stool somewhere, no doubt. And, you know, they think it's going to play out that way. The other thing I wonder is, all right, so taking it down a different track altogether, how long do we have before the pain is inevitable or Congress could step in and say, whoa, hold on. This is a really bad idea. You have to find a graceful way out of it right now, or we're going to take charge of it ourselves. And maybe all that pain goes away real fast. And Trump accomplishes exactly what he wanted to do, what one of the many things that he loves to do, which is put the damsel in distress and then rescue the damsel and look like the hero. He saw this happen with Biden. He screwed up his last presidency. And so did a pandemic. He helped the pandemic a lot. And then we had an enormous recovery, and Biden gets credit for that recovery, which Trump, I'm sure, can't stand. So I'm going to create a recession. I'm going to create an economic crisis, take us to the verge of it, and then I'm going to bail us out.
Oh, Jay.
And look how good spends his whole day thinking about this sort of thing. But I think ultimately you're right, the tax cuts are a big thing. And finally, the other thing I wonder is if we don't get out of it through Congress and we don't get out of it through Trump capitulating to himself, we get out of it through another distraction. And what's the next distraction is what I wonder. And yeah, I was listening to WAMC when I was driving in, and somebody mentioned something about rare earths.
Yeah.
And this becomes the justification for Greenland.
Right.
And that becomes the next big thing is
whether
we invade Greenland or whether we just seize it or
by any means necessary.
By any means, because I can hear Trump saying this,
we
have to do it.
Yeah.
We just have to do it. Yeah. You understand.
All right. Let's take a break. I want to get back to Aaron and have him respond to a couple of things that were brought up. And to all of you, we have a lot of letters. Surprise.
Really?
We have a lot of letters, and we'll get to those as well. 9:47 on a Friday morning. Seems later, doesn't it? We'll be back right after this. All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion as we discuss tariffs and fallout and all of that stuff on this Friday morning. We go to your letters. There are many. Christine writes, somebody's know exactly where this is going. Trump hasn't engineered this with his very own limited brain cells.
Okay. I'm sure he's got plenty of consultants at the Heritage Foundation, who are talking to him about this, and a lot of people in his cabinet to the point that they'll be frank with him. But I think you're right. You don't give him or maybe you said it. That you don't give him the truth. You give him what he wants to hear.
Yeah, they're all afraid of him.
But, you know, it's funny because the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute and the Cato, that ecosphere of very conservative D.C. think tanks, are very pro-free trade.
Yeah.
Just like the Wall Street – I give the Wall Street Journal editorial board credit for saying this is catastrophic. This is – this is not why people voted for you. Mm-hmm. Now, they're on his side, and they want him to do all of the other awful things like deregulate and get rid of the EPA. But at least in terms of the economics of it, it's surprising that these free trade organizations are going along with them.
This and that United Auto Workers is supporting. But, you know, Right. But, you know, I remember the controversy with President Bill Clinton and the World Trade Organization and remember NAFTA. Mm-hmm. Do we have to? But and there are very legitimate labor and environmental concerns with so-called free trade. However, it is completely unrealistic to suggest that all that manufacturing is coming back to the United States because of these tariffs. Yes, we want U.S. jobs, but as economists tell us, the future is AI, which is a huge energy suck, by the way. Everyone needs to look at the energy impacts of AI. The notion that Apple is going to build a new factory in the U.S. anytime soon. I know they announced it, but remember, 52% of Apple phones are imported, and people can't live without their phones. But I feel like Trump is really exploiting his populist base by saying, we're going to get, you know, a new car company back in Gary, Indiana. You know, we're going to support our farmers. None of that is going to happen.
That's good stump speech material. Mark my words. If these stay in place, this is going to create so much pain and people will realize that this is a false prophet.
Yeah, he'll keep saying what people want to hear. And for, I think, a period of time, I don't know how long it's going to last, they will believe it. They will believe, even as their 401ks go down and their prices go up and everything, they will believe whatever he tells them, that your 401k is doing great. And don't worry, it's right around the corner. The stock market's going to come surging back once they understand what I'm doing and all that. But, you know, there will come a point if this goes on where I think people are going
to say,
the
road to Damascus,
this isn't working, guy. Yeah. We're not that gullible.
Charles writes to us and says, stocks are on sale. Great time to buy. People buy everything else on sale, but buy stocks high and sell when they are low? Not too smart. The market always comes back. You can buy now or wait about a little bit to see if the bottom goes a bit lower. Index funds are best bet. Be smart, not emotional, writes Charles. Then we go to Duncan. My question, where does Trump get his economic ideas and theories from? Everyone is saying his tariffs are a recipe for disaster. Who is the great mind behind his actions and what credibility do they have?
Well, we're back to the Gilded Age. You know, it was mainly, you know, and Mark Levin on talk radio was waxing nostalgic about how, and many people, and I've heard many people, God, I sound like Trump now, doing
magnificent
this,
people.
That
magnificent.
There was a point in time where we, you know, the government was funded almost entirely on tariffs, and we didn't have an income tax. And then the income tax came along, and the tariffs went away, and all evil came from it. And it's a very simplistic interpretation of history, but you know that appeals to Donald Trump.
When do we get to the throwing the T in the C part?
Well, it's going to be Tesla's.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Got it. Richard says, "Can trade wars?"
Not that I am condoning that.
Can trade wars lead to shooting wars? Ask World War I and World War II. Then we go to Russ. This is the high water mark for the MAGA movement. Now begins the long march back to the rule of law in our country. Randy says, I expect this administration to corrupt our economic numbers. How can we trust the job numbers or the inflation rate? There's a good question for you, Aaron. How do we trust these numbers that we're getting from these federal bureaus that are poorly staffed and often run by people who may not be of the highest caliber?
This was a concern for Trump's first term that didn't come to materialize, that he would cook the books. The way, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which releases the employment situation report, the inflation report, and a host of other important data, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the Bureau of Labor Statistics falls under the Department of Labor, Bureau of Economic Analysis falls under the Commerce Department. It is not it is no longer out of the question that the very public and consistent methodology that these agencies use to calculate data begins to become polluted. Now, he might cook the books. He might make it so that, it brings fuzzy math to a new a level. But whether or not the job whether or not he cooks the books on job numbers or inflation numbers, the magnitude of what's happening, and I cannot stress this enough, this is a catastrophe in the making. It doesn't matter what, if he cooks the books and he says, well, unemployment actually went down from 4% to 2% this month. I think when the mass of the population is unemployed and you can rely on state unemployed offices, they'll say, well, that doesn't matter because I don't have a job. So I think reality will butt heads with any cooked books.
And grocery prices. He likes the right, I was gonna grocery. Say,
people are going to see that with, again,
they put,
their
they
monthly
put the
shopping
groceries
bill.
Groceries in a bag.
In a bag. I think he's thinking a paper bag, by the way.
I guess.
Which
well,
is good.
No, a tote bag, an NPR
like
tote
that.
Bag.
Yeah.
Canceled out by the straws. Most grocery shopping is done by women, and so it'll be interesting with the gender gap with Trump. But, you know, price of eggs is adorable compared to what's about to happen when you go grocery shopping.
Yeah.
After reading Money, Lies, and God by Catherine Stewart, writes Rick, I believe this might not be about the economy. What I hope is not happening is the dismantling of democracy to create an authoritarian rule in America. That might be the actual goal of this mess, and I hope I'm wrong. Diane says, here's my hypothesis. Why would Trump include islands that only have penguins living on them? This is a control tariff that lets Putin know that Trump is following his orders to the letter.
There's a complicated explanation for that. The fact is that he did tax, he did put tariffs on islands that have only penguins on them. So you can, I couldn't get into this when I was trying to write an editorial because you need to be concise. But the islands are listed as having a trade with the United States because they are part of Australia, I believe.
Yes.
So somehow they end up credited for some sort of trade, like $600,000 or $600 million or something. And it's not the penguins who we're actually trading with.
I do like the penguin factor.
Yes,
though.
I it like that great. Aspect of the story.
But what is their logic on exempting Russia and North Korea?
We already have. We're not trading. Effectively, the argument is we're not really trading with them anymore, so we can't really put any tariffs
all
on
right.
them. There's all sorts of restrictions. And two, if we do have tariffs, they're really
Russian
high already.
Russian vodka?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Alyssa says, does anyone else think that the lack of concern over the decimation of the market is because the 1% will be able to buy up stocks at fire sale prices? You know, you never can be too rich. And final letter before we go to a break. Edward, let's presume the revenue from the tariffs goes into reducing the debt, not into Trumpian tax cuts. Is there any bet? No. Is there any benefit to the economic society?
Deficits and debt don't matter in a modern economy. The political question, they have no negative economic impacts. The biggest concern that politicians have is who benefits from that deficit spending. Is it billionaires or is it working people?
I just want to push back on that notion because, you know, just from like the layman's point of view, I heard that a lot over the years. We actually that was a common point of talking point when we were discussing editorials about debt. And what I don't understand is how that applies when you're paying as much in interest as, let's say, your defense budget or your one of your safety net budgets. How does that work that it doesn't matter?
10 o'clock on this Friday morning. We'll take a break. In the meantime, stand by for news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Lots to talk about on this Friday morning as we talk about tariffs and reaction. Last night or yesterday afternoon, Aaron sent me a note and suggesting some stories that were specific to what we're talking about. The article from The Guardian, Climate Crisis on Track to Destroy Capitalism, was slugged. Here's another one that might be fun, since Judith is there. And I thought, wow, that does sound like fun.
Yeah, if you think the end of capitalism is fun.
It is fun. There's the fun story. So that's kind of where we're at in this part of the morning. I want to talk about that. I would also like to discuss just a little bit more overall about tariffs and cleaner energy. So let me ask about how tariffs could upend the transition to cleaner energy, and then we'll get into the denouement, which would be the destruction of capitalism. Judith.
You got the order right.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So people should know that the president exempted oil and gas from the tariffs, but there are tariffs on steel, which is used for wind turbines, batteries for electric vehicles, and this promises to really slow down the transition to clean energy. Right now, China produces pretty high quality and inexpensive solar panels, so we're going to see a reduction there. This year, prior to this week, you know, pre-tariff announcement, this year, wind, solar, and batteries were projected to make up 93% of new electric capacity in the United States. This is the clean energy transition that has been in the works for the last 20 years. And I think this is very much linked to last fall, a bunch of fossil fuel executives went to Mar-a-Lago to meet with candidate Trump. And he very openly said to them, if you donate $1 billion to my campaign, I will take care of you with policies. And that is what is happening. Now, at the same time, former New York gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin is working to destroy my old agency, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And I just want to emphasize that none of this is happening in isolation. This is orchestrated. So EPA recently announced that they will offer industrial polluters a way to avoid new regulations to reduce mercury, arsenic, and other toxic chemicals from smokestacks. That's a lot of coal plants, by the way. Mercury is a potent neurotoxin. This is a true story. EPA recently set up a new email account for companies that they can write in an email and request to be exempt from these provisions of the Clean Air Act. You just send an email. EPA has said publicly that the president will personally decide whether these companies get these exemptions, which is basically permission to bypass clean air rules. They say the justification of if they'll offer these exemptions is if they are in the interest of national security. That's kind of vague. Or if the technology is not widely available. And it is. We have sophisticated air pollution controls to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, mercury emissions, et cetera, from smokestacks. At the same time, Lee Zeldin, the really inadequate EPA administrator, said last month that he's looking to cut 65% of EPA's budget. So all this brought together with Trump declaring also in January, he said we had an energy emergency. All of this together means that the transition to clean renewable energy will be significantly delayed. It means we're going to see more burning of fossil fuels. The U.S., for the first time under President Biden, by the way, was one of the largest exporters of oil and gas to other countries. The fossil fuel companies must have raised the $1 billion or close to it that was requested. So what does this mean for you and me? First, it means more acid rain in the Adirondacks and the Catskills and the Hudson Highlands, because air pollution knows no boundaries. You remember years ago, Attorney General Robert Abrams started suing Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania for air pollution from their coal plants hitting New York so hard. It also means a warming planet. I mean, the timing could not be worse in terms of scientists telling us we are getting very dangerously close to the point of real real problems with violent weather. It's not just the warmth, which is a problem. So many people dying of heat stroke, more wildfires. Don't forget the L.A. Urban wildfires. And violent weather means more flooding. And again, FEMA is being pulled back. So it's grim, but the states can act. You know, the state budget is delayed. In the state budget, there is a proposal to pass something called the New York Heat Act, which would increase the chances of a transition to away from fossil fuels and more toward energy efficiency, renewable energy. Why the New York State the New York State Assembly is not passing the New York Heat Act, I don't know. But, you know, the state budget is not done. And so it needs to factor in these federal policies because it's going to take years to recover from this. And in New York, thankfully, we don't have fracking. We don't have a huge amount of oil. There's some in western New York. But our indigenous energy resources are the sun, the wind, geothermal, water, small-scale hydro. New York can be the clean energy leader. These federal policies make it harder. We need to catch up to states like Texas, which has more wind. Iowa has more wind. We are not embracing clean energy as quickly as we can. And in fact, just the other day, a coalition of environmental groups, including Earth Justice, Citizen Action, Sierra Club, and others, sued Governor Hochul for going so slow on meeting the state's climate goals. Yes, the state can do more. It's much harder when you have tariffs on steel to build wind turbines and batteries for electric vehicles. So this is all connected. It's not a coincidence. You know, the top staff at the EPA, Zeldin, is just kind of like, you know, the wandering former member of Congress who doesn't know what he's talking about. The people who are really running the EPA are literally from the American Petroleum Institute and the American Chemistry Council.
So now let's put the two together. As far as destroying capitalism, how far are we away from that?
Well, we're getting closer by the day. It seems that's the silver lining to all of this. But before I get to that, I want to address something Judith said, which is the cruel irony of what Trump is doing is that clean energy manufacturing is the perfect avenue to create middle income jobs that don't require a 4-year college degree. You could have certificate and vocational training.
Community colleges.
This is a huge, this could be a huge potential source of employment for workers who have been dislocated because of globalization. And it seems like he's shooting himself in both feet at this point and probably his thighs in a couple weeks, that there's this opportunity here, right? That the U.S. can get ahead, whether it's clean energy production, whether it was just expanding the CHIPS Act, all of these growth industries. Meanwhile, Howard Lutnick's talking about bringing back sneaker manufacturing. We don't want low-skill, low-paying jobs. We want the high-skill, high-paying jobs of the future that will actually have positive spillover effects. And since we're balking on that, the Guardian article, which cited a report that was talking about something Judith and I have talked about many, many times, and that you can think about the environmental consequences and the personal consequences of climate change and global warming, but there's another part to that, and that's the economic and the financial side. And that is, insurance companies have already stopped insuring properties in hurricane-prone areas in coastal Florida and in other parts of the world. So when insurance companies stop providing insurance, that decreases the amount of financial services that can be provided that are really important to generating growth and improving the standard of living in communities, like extending mortgages or offering home equity lines of credit. So what you have is what's going to happen is a mass dislocation of people who are going to just cannot afford to pay for a home in cash because an insurance company won't provide it. So that you're going to have these essentially ghost communities as climate change becomes more pervasive, as it affects more areas, that's going to spread. Insurance companies essentially offer a hedge against risk, right? You pay a premium every month. Hopefully you don't need to use it, but if you do need to use it, they offer payments on that. Two possibilities. One, insurance companies see the risk as being too high, that it's no longer worth their while to insure it. The second option is that they continue to offer insurance, and if climate change intensifies faster than they predict, then these insurance companies start going bankrupt. Well, where does that leave us as a society if we can't insure ourselves against some of the most basic forms of risk? So whether it's the trade war, whether it's the firing of federal workers, whether it's mass deportations, whether it's climate change, the uncertainty that is becoming pervasive in our daily lives, coming from literally almost every direction, is bad for business. Businesses don't invest during times of uncertainty. If you can't figure out what economic policy is going to be tomorrow, let alone 5 years from now, who's going to invest in building in long-term capital investment projects? No one. So you'd see that growth grind to a halt. If insurance companies stop offering insurance on homes in an increasingly wide array of hurricane and flood and fire-prone areas, then financial services disappear. So it's not, I mean, it sounds alarmist to hear, like, well, this could be the end of capitalism. All of these effects, in my opinion, whether it's climate change or the trade war, are accelerants to essentially mass world turmoil. And whether that, I don't know whether that takes the form of food riots and revolutions in, you know, lower income countries or higher income countries. I don't know what this looks like, but it seems like that snowball is coming down the hill a lot faster than it was 10 years ago and getting a lot bigger.
Well, it's good to see the
and it's melting.
Oh God.
It's good to see the insurance companies speaking out on this. Reinsurance companies like Swiss Re have been speaking out for years.
Reinsurance is the insurance companies that insure insurance companies.
Right. What the reaction in some state governments has been is to use taxpayer money to subsidize insurance. I don't think that's a great move. But if you cannot get insurance, refinancing, you may not get an original mortgage. And I remember when I went down to the United States Virgin Islands after Hurricane Maria hit, the two things really stuck with me and was a reminder that we need strong laws. I'm a former federal regulator, so of course I'm going to say we need strong laws and enforcement of them. I remember standing out on a ridge, and there were two houses right next to each other in the U.S. Virgin Islands. One was totally destroyed by the hurricane. The other was modest problems. And I said to the person I was with, these are right next to each other. Why did one stand and the other didn't? And he said, The one that was destroyed was the older home before we had building codes that said you have to build to withstand particular hurricanes. Of course, those building codes are now antique because they were withstand like a Cat 3 hurricane, not Category 5. The other thing that I learned was many people in the West Virgin Islands cannot get insurance because of storms. And so if you've got wealth, you self-insure. And what that means is you don't have insurance. So when your property is damaged, you just dip into your savings and you fix it. Most people can't do that. So there are parts of not just the world, but there's the Caribbean with two U.S. territories. There's Louisiana. There's L.A. fires. These are all previews of what will be coming. And again, FEMA on the decline, but also FEMA, by the way, would pay people to rebuild their homes on barrier islands in flood-prone areas. So we as taxpayers keep putting these buildings back up, whether it's flooding or hurricanes, and there's really no discussion to change that. FEMA administrators in the past, Republicans and Democrats alike, have tried to change that, but Congress won't let them.
This is like, you know, there's the existential argument here about, you know, saving a planet, saving the economy and all that. And then there's just the very practical one that, you know, for years, the climate deniers, you know, just denied there was a problem at all. And then they moved into, well, you know, we'll just adapt. And as one person very well put it in the story that Joe sent around on this, you can't just pick up a city and move it. You know, I wrote this years ago that you can't just pick up your farm and move it either. Every individual person is who has to deal with this in the Midwest, in the breadbasket, in the near the Mississippi, you know, wherever they are, is going to be destroyed by this. Their livelihood is going to be destroyed. The only thing that makes sense in all of this, you know, and you get into the whole idea that there is, as you put it, there is a whole new economy coming. There is a green economy coming. China has already dusted us on it. We had a chance with the Biden legislation and all the things that have been done in recent years and where we were headed with this in terms of green energy. We had a chance to begin to catch up. And he is going to destroy this because this is his mindset. This is not good. We don't like green energy and so forth. But when you take all that, I forgot what the conclusion of that was.
Sorry. I think you were going to conclude that the Trump administration is a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry.
That was not where I was going, actually. But where was it? I'll let you know. Oh, I know where it was. The only one thing that this is good for Donald Trump is that it strengthens his argument for Canada as the 51st state, because we are moving north. Everything, forests without our changing it are moving north. It doesn't mean they're picking up and moving. It's just the conditions are getting better. And I suspect that eventually the upper Midwest and so forth, but I don't know how fertile the land is. There's a reason the Midwest, it's not just the weather. It's the ground.
Right.
It's not just climate, it's the ground. So I don't know, you know, but I'm sure that in the back of his mind, Donald Trump thinks we're going to have great farms in Canada.
Yeah, when people complain about grocery prices, they were responding to essentially a very temporary but intense restructuring of demand. When COVID hit, people stopped going out to eat. They started cooking at home. That was the initial surge in grocery prices. Supply chains can't keep up, pushes grocery prices up further. Putin invades Ukraine, wheat and grain exports to the U.S. that are involved in not only animal feed, but which affects meat prices and fossil fuels, prices go up. That's all subsided to a greater or lesser extent. Groceries are still more expensive today than they were 5 years ago. Low grocery prices are not coming back. That's the adaptable part. What we're not seeing is that when you start talking about climate change and that all of a sudden previously fertile land, we're now moving to more marginal land that will not produce greater yields.
Right.
That's going to raise food prices even more. So when you think about what happens in the developing world, that's when you see food riots. And when you think about what happens in the developed world, you see a greater and greater share of people's budget go to the consumption of food because there's no elasticity there, right? So people think that this is an abstract concept, and it's not. It's going to hit people's pocketbooks. It's going to affect where people can live. It's going to affect the services people can buy from, whether it's, you know, banks or insurance companies. It's here and it's happening, and we seem to be moving it really in the wrong direction.
And
it sounds like we're willing this.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The frustrating thing about this is that there have been people, you know, not wild radicals like us, who have been warning about this for years, and they're sober people. The insurance industry
right.
has been warning about this
Decades.
For years, and the military has been warning right. about this for years. I listened to a general year. Of all places, we were at a conference in Rhode Island, right on the water, and it was a perfect place to be talking about water and rising seas and climate and stuff. And he said, "This is military planning right now is shifting to focusing on this type of turmoil in the world that there are going to be." He you know, kind of painted a geographic picture of what's going to happen to Bangladesh when there's right. one good
and
tidal wave.
And New Jersey and New York during Hurricane Sandy. Yeah. I mean, we worked with the yeah. Army Corps of Engineers because of the, like, sewage treatment plants. The basements were totally flooded out, so the electricity was off. And so you had literally raw sewage, massive amounts going into Newark Bay. So EPA worked with the Army Corps of Engineers on that. I mean, Biden really was providing federal money to try to you can't really stormproof an entire city. And you just, you know, there was a concern that mitigation efforts, you know, not building right on the shoreline, they're good, but they don't really work when you've got a Category 5 hurricane hitting.
We'll pause there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up on the other side. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Last chance to get your letters in. Panel at WAMC.org. Aaron Pasitti, Jay Jochnowitz, Judith Enck, and your questions coming up next. First news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Aaron Pasitti, Jay Jochnowitz, and Judith Enck make up our group this morning. We welcome you and your letters. We'll be going to 11 o'clock. Time to get in a few. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Joanna writes, "The malignant stupidity is astounding." Paul Krugman, "We'll go on the sign I carry tomorrow at the standout in South Hadley, Massachusetts. What is Trump's goal? Answer, martial law and permanent dictatorship." Should note a number of rallies throughout our region taking place tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be there in surprise at the Albany rally sponsored by Indivisible. There are over 1,000 events all over the country for people to come out and use their voice against Trump policies. Come find me in Albany. It might be a little rainy, but that's okay. Just wear a raincoat. I always bring...
Find Waldo or Judith.
I always bring my sign. It's a cutout of a polar bear, and it says Polars for Solar. Yeah. So look for that. But there are
Cute.
Also... Albany is at 11. Who says environmentalists do not have a sense of humor? Albany is at 11. Troy is at 9:30. Pittsfield is at 1 o'clock. West Stockbridge is at noon. If you have an electric car, you can just go from one to the other. But
unless it's a Tesla.
Yeah.
You might want to take an Uber.
Right. But bring friends, bring families, bring signs not on sticks. And tomorrow, I think, is well-timed in terms of the concerns, that very legitimate concerns that so many people feel about these policies.
We have a ton of letters, but we also have a couple more topics I'd like to get to. So let me just rip through the letters here real quick, and then if anybody wants to jump in, please do. And if not, we'll get to the other stuff. Laura writes, "Why is March employment double expectations? Is it because the impact of the last few days in the stock market, tariffs, and the full impact of federal agency cuts are not fully worked into the economy and those projections?"
That's correct. Today's job report showed a, for a 4,000 number decrease in government employment. Government employment is not a major contributor to overall national employment. So, you know, even if the hatchet comes down on federal employees, it's not going to show up directly in the employment data. The retaliatory tariffs that that increased the number of layoffs in the U.S., the decreased purchasing power of consumers, that slow growth, that's what's going to have the big effect. And what I meant to say earlier is expect to see those increases in the unemployment rate, expect to see the increase in prices early summer. That's when this will start showing up in, obviously, the aggregate data that we look at in the official government reports, but it'll also start showing up in your grocery bill. It'll start showing up in, you know, your clothes bill and electricity bill, all of the other bills.
I think it's going to show up sooner because companies are going to try to exploit the situation and charge more. I think we're going to see it like next week when you go shopping.
Anne writes us and says, I have left messages previously asking why, shouty caps, your panel, shouty caps, won't mention the Cornwall Alliance combining fossil fuel with the religious right, shouty caps, entities that got Trump to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. None, shouty caps, of the media is covering this influence behind the scenes.
Thanks for looking at me, Joe. I don't know what the Cornwall Alliance is, but I do know that Trump has been very clear that he is responsive to ExxonMobil and Shell, and he pulled out of the climate accord the first time he was in office. That's the United Nations agreement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Not surprised if there's some religious element to this, but I would argue that it's the political influence of fossil fuel companies that is really driving the day here.
It's a curious alliance, though. I mean, why would
conservative Christian public policy group that claims that a free market approach to care for the environment is sufficient and is critical of much of the current environmental movement.
It sounds like a political movement with the veneer of religion on it as opposed to a legitimate, you know, it's not a marriage of the fundamentalists and big oil so much as probably big oil just making itself look religious.
Yeah, and I do want to say that there is some really important leadership from the faith community on climate issues and environmental issues. At Beyond Plastics, we're lucky we just hired a Presbyterian minister, Reverend Catherine Bilkey, who is working with faith groups around the country who want to reduce plastic pollution. And the faith groups working on climate have been doing this for 10, 15 years. So I think there's probably more of that going on than what was just mentioned.
Alejandro says, can anyone explain to me why an industrial concern establishing manufacturing here in response to the tariffs wouldn't rely on robotics and to AI to bypass actually hiring U.S. workers?
There is a fallacy that let me rephrase that. That Trump's argument is that trade deficits have caused the decline in manufacturing jobs. Yeah. That's partially true. But if you look at countries like Germany that have huge trade surpluses, they've experienced a very similar percentage decline in manufacturing employment because of automation. If we want good jobs, they don't need to be manufacturing jobs. You can make a janitor job a good job if you pay them a living wage.
And allow them to join a union,
have the government provide universal health care, low-cost education, retirement security. It doesn't need to be a manufacturing job. Any job can be made a good job with the right policies.
We go to Raina, who says the high tariffs on South Asia seems especially cruel. Who among us doesn't buy inexpensive T-shirts and jeans that are imported from there? What will happen to their economy as a result? It does seem like awful foreign policy.
Vietnam, it kind of leaped out at me because they were up in the 40s, I think, and it was
Bangladesh.
Is this Trump's way of saying I fought the Vietnam War?
I learned this from Alice. From Allison this morning, my wife. During Trump round one, when he imposed the tariffs on China, China offshored a lot of its manufacturing and assembly to Vietnam. So Vietnam saw the surge of foreign investment that came from China. So now Vietnam is exporting more electronics that used to be made in China than textiles. So Trump round one closed the front door. Now with this worldwide tariff, he's closed the back door that countries like China have been exploiting. So that's why you see such high tariffs in Southeast Asia, is because China, in, you know, after the 2017, 2018 tariffs, relocated its assembly to cheaper countries in Southeast Asia.
You know, in an indirect way, it speaks to something that I was thinking about before, that, you know, if we keep playing this game of whack-a-mole with every administration, and you have a policy, like, you know, we were moving toward a green economy, and now we're not, and we probably will retreat as much as possible on that. If you know, this idea that we're going to get all these businesses back, I can't imagine that any business right now thinks that, you know, a 4-year plan or a three and a three quarter year plan is any way to make a multi-billion-dollar, million-dollar, or billion-dollar investment. So what do you do when you know, and what does the rest of the world do when it knows that for every 4 years, the entire policy of the United States could change? You know, that's the other problem with Trump, is that he came in, and it's like he's not the president of the United States. He's the president of Mar-a-Lago, and it's just the rest of the United States happens to surround that, and he's going to do whatever he wants.
And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that after announcing the tariffs and all of the economic anxiety, yesterday the president flew to Mar-a-Lago to have a golf tournament with Saudi sponsors. He spends more time golfing and using so much fossil fuel to fly to Florida every weekend. I mean, he's not even trying to portray any leadership or concern. I mean, you announce these massive policy shifts and then you go golfing with the Saudis?
That used to be called bad optics.
Yeah, and this is going to have global ramifications beyond economics, is that foreign governments, the EU, China, other major trading partners, are going to see that the U.S. has become too unreliable, which is what you were alluding to. They're going to start looking for new trading relationships. So the irony of this isn't going to make America great again. This is going to make America poor and isolated, and it's going to embolden countries like China, the European Union, and other major world economies to rethink their supply chains, to rethink their political alliances away from the U.S.
Lightning round of questions or letters from listeners. Vicky says, I believe this has nothing to do with bringing back manufacturing or anything else that has been suggested. This is about becoming a dictator and creating a large oligarchy. He wants to be just like Putin. We are watching the takeover of our country. Mitch says, could Trump be trying to crush the dollar itself so it could be replaced by his own cryptocurrency so that he could effectively own all the world's currency himself and create a modern American feudalism, peasants and all? Then we go to Mark. As awful as this week has been, wait till the bombing of Iran starts this weekend. Dark. Cheryl says, these guys are crashing the economy for no good reason. If we had to tighten our belts for something for the common good, like universal health care, it would be at least a good cause. We get nothing, we pay more, and it makes no sense. That from Cheryl.
To Mark's point, I have to admit, I share that fear with him. I think it was Mark. I do share that fear
about
with
the bombing
that,
in Iran.
Yeah, we already have an administration that's taken the wrong lesson from history on tariffs versus taxes versus the gold, you know, versus the Gilded Age versus now versus, you know, I mean, he just reinvents history in his mind and so forth. What I worry about is that there are people that, you know, I heard the line on talk radio last night that, you know, the Great Depression ended with World War II. This is not the way to end what we are about to face. And I worry that in the back of Trump's mind, we just need a good war.
Well, as a journalist, I think over the weekend, you should be watching your Signal account. And then you will tell us what's going to happen.
Pete will keep me informed, I'm sure.
Yeah, so just know exactly what's happening. Yeah. Christine says, someone, somebody's know exactly what is going on. I read that letter already. My apologies. How can it be that one person, writes Deanne, can cause all this chaos and decide for everyone? It is just because the Republicans won't stand up to him?
It's not just one person, though. This was all foreshadowed in Project 2025. I keep going back to Project 2025. It's all in there, including advising federal appointees to use Signal and not use their government accounts to communicate. We knew what we were getting.
And finally, before we go to our final break, will these tariffs greatly increase the tax revenue received by the federal government?
No. And the reason why, if the price of imports go up because of the tariffs, people are going to buy less. So if you buy less, then all of a sudden that revenue, that tariff revenue disappears.
But there'll be some tariff revenue, right?
There'll be some. Mm-hmm. And that will be borne by consumers.
Right.
And
we're paying.
We will be subsidizing what we know he's going to do with that. I mean, he said it.
Right.
We're going to raise tax revenue in this way by taxing consumers to fund this $5 trillion tax bill for millionaires and billionaires. Tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. Yep.
We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Final moments together with our group before the weekend. And we have another hour of the show, but these folks will be let go. We were talking about Pete Hegseth a moment ago.
Yes.
The Inspector General will...
Fox Weekend host. Weekend.
Inspector...
Secretary
Inspector
of
General
Defense now.
will scrutinize Pete Hegseth's disclosures in a Signal chat. The inquiry follows revelations that top administration officials used the unclassified messaging platform to coordinate military strikes in Yemen. The Pentagon Inspector General's office said Thursday that it will scrutinize those disclosures made by Hegseth using the unclassified messaging app as he and other top Trump administration officials coordinated the highly sensitive military operation last month. Stephen Stebbins, the Pentagon's acting Inspector General,
said
in a memo to Hegseth and the Defense Secretary, Deputy Defense Secretary Steve Feinberg, that the review, quote, will determine the extent to which the Secretary of Defense and other DOD personnel complied with DOD policies and procedures for the use of commercial messaging application for official business. It also will review compliance with classification and records retention requirements. A Defense Department spokesman declined to comment, saying it does not discuss ongoing investigations. What will this amount to?
So this reminds me, this is not an investigation, is the first thing to point out. It's a review.
An inquiry.
Inquiry of the policy considerations this may raise and whether they need to. This is window dressing. I don't think he's going to lose his job over it. I think he was told exactly this is part of the spin. This is part of the damage control on it. It's very much like what we saw with Neil Gorsuch when it came out that the FBI had not done a thorough background check on him. And they said, OK, we'll go back and we'll do a background check. And basically I think the background check was limited to calling the witness against him. I can't remember her name now, but that was it. They didn't do a
Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh.
Did I say Gorsuch? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is how they tamp down the controversy and satisfy everybody. And in the end, they'll say there were some policy issues maybe that need, maybe we shouldn't be using Signal after all, but okay.
Well, it was revealed yesterday by a major outlet that the guy in the White House, former Florida congressman, starts with W, the guy who started the Signal chain.
Waltz.
Thank you. I'm blocking him out. Who put the editor of The Atlantic on the Signal chain? That guy. he has done this on multiple sensitive security issues. Mm-hmm. It's not just this bombing that I think it was suggested like 15 to 20 other initiated signal chats. Someone has to look at that, not in a whitewashed way.
And they're also looking at, and he was also using, and his staff is using Gmail accounts as well, which, I mean, anybody who uses email nowadays knows that your email is reviewed unless you use certain email clients. DuckDuckGo, even DuckDuckGo automatically strips it. They go through your email and they strip out trackers for you. But they're going through your email. There's not, it's like.
And it's not just random. It's like, I mean, there are intelligence agencies in other countries that have very sophisticated techniques. I mean, this is a very serious national security threat.
He also left open his Venmo account to that the contact list was available to anyone.
I know this will sound harsh. These people are idiots.
This gets back to what we were talking
morons.
About.
I like the word moron because they use words as much to describe
who leaves
people.
Open your Venmo account? Who does signal chats on the most sensitive things? And I know we don't want to relitigate this, but you have the vice president on it. You have the secretary of state on it. You have like 16 people. None of them say maybe this is not a good idea and we should go to a SCIF.
Drug dealers know better.
Yes.
because they know there's consequences if they get caught.
Yes, that's right. And, there you go.
And teenagers named Caitlin and Ryan know better. I mean, teenagers know how to do this.
But this gets back to the malignant stupidity or three-dimensional chess argument. Like, how was the editor of The Atlantic accidentally included?
Nope.
Is that not,
it was sucked onto his phone?
That was accidental. It had to be.
Okay, so we're at the
these
stupidity
people are
part.
Idiots.
Yeah, I love malignant
but how
stupidity.
Does, I mean,
that
of
is...
all of the people you could accidentally include,
he was probably already communicating with him. And I mean, we've all done it. Yeah. I mean, I've put like I get confused on when you get texts and you don't have the names.
Well, you put you put two letters in, and then you just assume it's. Inevitably, if I put in KD, it'll go to my wife, Kelly Donahue.
Right.
But sometimes it goes to another KD that happens to be in my contact list.
And the high stakes for you is, where are we going for dinner?
Right. Now, what the make my life sound so boring. but I will say that what I find fascinating. Now I don't remember what I found fascinating about this.
That was a terrible thing I just said.
No,
I apologize.
No, it's fine. I don't even go out to dinner.
I thought it was a compliment. We don't go to dinner. There's nowhere to go where we live.
Well, that's
escape
true.
Rooms. It's what escape room to go to. There
what
you go.
What escape room to to head out to. But I mean, the point being that the when you look at this particular case, Trump, the article that this just boggles my mind. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but I just found it boggling, was the article in the New York Times last Saturday that said that was not saying that Trump was going to take any decisive action, but discussed that all week there had been these discussions. Should I get rid of Waltz? 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 And the reason was not because of the use of Signal. The reason was because he had Goldberg in his contact list.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's not, mm-hmm. it's who you know. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. It's who you know. Eric Adams is going to be running for re-election as an independent. He's off the Democratic ballot now, so that clears the way for Democratic mm-hmm. candidate Andrew Cuomo, and also pits Adams as the independent versus I believe probably will forego then a primary, right?
I would not put money on Cuomo winning the Democratic primary. There is a high level of political engagement because of the Trump administration. Activists vote in primaries. Don't sleep on Zoran Mamdani. A lot of people don't know who he is. He is a distinguished member of the assembly. He has raised more than enough money. He can't, no one can donate to him anymore because he's reached the highest level on campaign finance. He submitted lots of petitions yesterday. I don't think it's a shoo-in that Cuomo wins. There's a lot of concern with Cuomo's record in New York City, in particular on COVID, on the Attorney General's report documenting that he is a sexual predator. There are a number of issues that I think will be coming out. Nothing new, but will be reminding people of the challenges during his gubernatorial tenure.
Where will you be tomorrow?
Well, I'll probably get a nasty phone call now from the Cuomo people, but tomorrow I will be at the state capitol at 11 a.m. at
She's on the
Indivisible
air at 11, Rich.
Rally.
What?
Tomorrow at 11 a.m. I will be at the state capitol at the Indivisible rally.
Excellent. Jay Jacknowitz, Aaron Pacitti, we will thank you all. Have a beautiful weekend. Thanks for all the intelligent talk.
And, thanks for the and extra explaining 15
this.
Minutes.
Yeah, yeah, no, this just was... sort of helps us get a little more in. Thank you all. We'll be back right after this. Okay.